Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Renee. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. Thanks for coming by tonight. I thought tonight we'd talk about something that's kind of interesting, has lots of controversy surrounds it, but it's also, you know, out there a little bit. It's the topic of exorcism. As most of you know, I was raised a Catholic, and exorcism is practiced all over the world, in third world countries a lot. In some countries, the only exorcists that are recognized are Catholic priests. However, I found some great stories. But first, I want to explain a little bit about exorcism. If you've seen the 1973 movie The Exorcist, you at least have some idea of what exorcism is about. It has to do with ridding a human being of diabolic possession. It's typically associated with the Roman Catholic beliefs. And if the movie is any indication, it's very, very scary. You may remember with a shudder the teenage girl whose head spun around, her body in convulsions, her voice that of a demon, spewing curses and obscenities, while the battered priest of the exorcist fought the devil to save her soul. The Hollywood version of an exorcism is supposedly based on a real-life exorcism performed in Maryland on a Maryland boy in 1949. Priests are still performing exorcisms today. If exorcism is real, is exorcism real, or are the subject and the exorcist unconsciously acting out roles from a popular movie? Are there other explanations for what some people call possession? In this article, we'll focus on Roman Catholic exorcism right because of its tremendous presence in popular culture thanks to The Exorcist and its successors. We'll learn why a priest might perform an exorcism, find out the ritual rituals that are involved, take a look at the real-life exorcism, and discuss the controversy surrounding the practice. The Catholic Encyclopedia defines exorcism as the act of driving out or warding off demons or evil spirits from persons, places, or things, which are believed to be possessed or infested by them, or are liable to become victims or instruments of their malice. In short, it is a ritual performed by a Catholic priest to expel the devil from a person, place, or thing. There are several types of exorcism in the Roman Catholic Church. Baptismal exorcism, blessing an infant prior to baptism to cleanse it of evil resulting from original sin. Simple exorcism, blessing a place or thing to rid it of evil influence. And then real exorcism, performing the rite of exorcism to rid a human being of a diabolical possession. A real exorcism is what most of us think of when we think of exorcism. In this case, the priest exorcist is dealing with a human being who is possessed by the devil. The devil is inhabiting this person's body. The Hollywood version of a real exorcism looks something like this. And in the article that I collected today, they have pictures of a scene from The Exorcism of Emily Rose. Now, The Exorcism of Emily Rose was taken from another story that I found to be, albeit interesting, incredibly sad, and it leaves a lot of unanswered questions for sure. And that is the story of Annalise Mitchell. And she was a young German girl, and she suffered a great deal. And her story started in 1952. And she was born four years after I was. But she was born in Bavaria, West Germany. And she died at age 23. And according to the death certificate, she died of starvation and dehydration. However, the story is incredible. And you, if you're a parent, you can maybe sympathize with what happened in this story, because I think sometimes we get at wit's end, and many of the stories that I researched today had to do with young people, and albeit many of them were in third world countries where moms or dads or both would seek out the help of a shaman or somebody like that that they believed in, and would try to rid their child of this possession. They also believe that those kind of possessions are, there's differences. There's possession sometimes by trolls or the devil himself or other evil entities. And often it is a form of mental illness or something along those lines, which we have talked about at length on this show. And of course, when we talked about insane asylums, these indeed were some of the reasons that some young children got locked up in institutes like the old, very old-fashioned insane asylums that used shock treatment and various ways of calming somebody down. But Annalise was, as I said, she was born in 1952 and in Germany. And she was a Catholic, and she was said to be possessed by demons. And she underwent an exorcism and succumbed in 1976. An investigation revealed that she died from emaciation, and her parents and the priest responsible were charged with negligence. Annalise had her first, what they're calling now, an epileptic attack when she was 16 and was diagnosed with it. She was soon in depression and was treated at a psychiatric hospital. By 1973, she became intolerant of various religious objects, became suicidal, and began to hear voices. Her condition worsened even further despite taking various medications, and she appealed to a priest for an exorcism. So it was her own idea to have this done. It was rejected. But in 1975, after much hesitation, two priests, after getting permission from the local bishop, began to perform the exorcism rites on her under secrecy. She died within a year on the 1st of July. A report into her cause of death stated that it was due to malnutrition and dehydration while the rites were being performed. This attracted an investigation which concluded that she could have been saved if medical help was given even a day before. The parents and the two priests were charged, and the court case attracted much media and public attention. It has been called a misidentification of a mental illness, negligence, abuse, and religious hysteria. After a guilty verdict, the defendants were sentenced to 6 months in jail, but given 3 years of probation and a fine. And the films The Exorcism of Emily Rose, Requiem, and Annalise, the Exorcist tapes, are all loosely based on her case. And as I said, she was born in Germany to a strict Catholic family. She was brought up along with three sisters. When she was 16, she suffered a severe convulsion and was diagnosed as having epilepsy. Soon she began hallucinating while praying. In 1973, when it took the turn for the worse, she suffered from depression and began to hear voices telling her that she was damned and would rot in hell. In the same year, Annalise was able to graduate and enroll at the University of Würzburg. Her treatment in an unnamed psychiatric hospital did not improve Annalise's health. Moreover, her depression began to deepen. She grew increasingly frustrated with medical intervention as it did not help her. Long-term medical treatment proved unsuccessful. Her condition, including her depression, worsened with time. A devout Catholic, Annalise began to attribute her condition to demonic possession. Annalise became intolerant of sacred places and objects, such as a crucifix, which she attributed to her own demonic possession. Throughout the course of the religious rites Annalise underwent, she was prescribed antipsychotic drugs, which she took to no avail. In June 1970, Annalise suffered a third seizure at the psychiatric hospital where she had been staying and was prescribed anticonvulsion drugs for the first time, including Dilantin. Now, for those of you who don't know, I know firsthand that Dilantin was given, especially in those days, pretty regularly for anything that was neurologically out of control. When my son Michael came out of a 10-day coma, it was discussed that he may have to take Dilantin for the rest of his life to keep him from having seizures. He took them while he was in the hospital, and he stopped taking them 2 weeks after he came out of the coma and never needed them again. But it was something that was heavily prescribed back in those days because, for one thing, they didn't truly understand a lot of those kind of problems. So the Dilantin didn't help her and didn't bring about any kind of alleviation of her symptoms. She also continued talking about what she called devil faces, seen at various times of the day. Annalise became convinced that conventional medicine was of no help, growing increasingly adamant that her illness was of a spiritual kind. She appealed to the Catholic Church to perform an exorcism on her. The same month, she was prescribed another drug. It's called Aolept. It's parathiazine, which is a phenothiazine with general properties similar to those as chlorpromazine, and parathiazine is used in the treatment of various psychoses, including schizophrenia and disturbed behavior. Her physical condition worsened, and she displayed aggression, self-injury, drank her own urine, and ate insects. In November of 1973, Annalisa started her treatment with Tegretol, an anti-seizure drug and mood stabilizer. Annalisa took this medicine frequently until shortly before her death. Annalisa went on a pilgrimage to San Damiano with a good friend of the family, a lady by the name of Thea Hine, who regularly organized such pilgrimages to holy places, not officially recognized by the church. Because Annalise was unable to walk past a crucifix and refused to drink the water of a holy spring, her escort concluded that she was suffering from demonic possession. Both Annalise and her family became convinced she was possessed and consulted several priests, asking for an exorcism. The priest declined, recommended the continuation of medical treatment, and informed the family that exorcisms required the bishop's permission. Eventually, in a nearby town, they came across the priest, Ernest Halt, who, after seeing Annalise, declared that she didn't look like an epileptic and that he didn't see her having seizures. He believed she was suffering from demonic possession. Halt urged the bishop to allow an exorcism. In September 1975, Bishop Joseph Stengel granted the priest, Arnold Renz, permission to exorcise according to the Ritual Romanum of 1614, but ordered total secrecy. Renz performed the first session on the 24th of September. Once convinced of her possession, Annalise and her parents and the exorcist stopped seeking medical treatment and put her fate solely into the hands of the exorcism rites. 67 exorcism sessions, one or two each week lasting up to 4 hours, were performed over about 10 months in 1975 and 1976. At some point, Annalisa began talking increasingly about dying to atone for the wayward youth of the day and of the apostate priests of the modern church, and she refused to eat. At her own request, doctors were no longer consulted. On July 1st, 1976, Annalise died in her home. The autopsy report stated the cause of death as malnutrition and dehydration from almost a year of semi-starvation while the rites of exorcism were performed. She weighed 68 pounds. The previous day, she had broken knees due to the continuous genuflection and was unable to move without assistance. It was reported to have been suffering from pneumonia. After an investigation, the state prosecutor maintained that Annalisa Mitchell's death could have been prevented even 1 week before she died. In 1976, the state charged Annalisa's parents and priests with negligent homicide. During the case, Annalisa's body was exhumed and tapes were played to the court of the exorcisms over the 11 months leading to her death. The parents were defended by a lawyer by the name of Schmidt Lechner. The state asked that no involved parties be jailed. Instead, the recommended sentence for the priests was a fine. The prosecution asked that the parents be rescued from punishment as they had suffered enough. The trial started on the 30th of March in 1978 in the district court and drew intense interest. Before the court, the doctors testified that Annalise Mitchell was not possessed, stating that this was a psychological effect because of her strict religious upbringing and her epilepsy. Although the doctor, Richard Roth, who was asked for medical help by Alt, that was the priest, allegedly said after the exorcism he witnessed on the 30th of May in 1976 that there is no injection against the devil, Annalise. The priests were defended by lawyers retained by the church, and the parents were defended by Eric Schmidt-Lechner. Schmidt-Lechner claimed that the exorcism was legal and that the German Constitution protected citizens in the unrestricted exercise of their religious beliefs. The defense played tapes recorded at the exorcism session, sometimes featuring what was claimed to be demons arguing as proof that Annalise was indeed possessed. Both priests presented their deeply held conviction that she was possessed, asserting there were six demons, including Adolf Hitler, Judas Iscariot, and Nero, that she was finally freed by exorcism just before she died. The bishop said that he was not aware of her alarming health condition when he approved the exorcism and did not testify. Ultimately, the accused were found guilty of manslaughter resulting from the negligence and were sentenced to 6 months in jail, which was later suspended, and 3 years of probation. It was a far lighter sentence than anticipated. But for the most part, experienced observers believed the effect would be the opposite. that merely bringing charges of negligent homicide against priests and parents would provoke changes and more caution in the carrying out of exorcisms. The case has been labeled as a misidentification of mental illness, negligence, abuse, and religious hysteria. Before the trial, the parents asked the authorities for permission to exhume the remains of their daughter. The request came after receiving a message from a Carmelite nun from the district of Allgäu in southern Bavaria. The nun told the parents that she had had a vision of their daughter's still intact body and that the vision authenticated the supernatural character of the daughter's case. The official reason presented by the parents to authorities was that Annalise Mitchell had been buried in undue hurry in a cheap coffin. After almost 2 years after the burial, on the 25th of February, 1978, her remains were replaced in a new oak coffin lined with tin. The official reports state that the body bore the signs of consistent deterioration. The accused exorcists were discouraged from seeing the remains of Annalise. Arnold Renz later stated that he had been prevented from entering the mortuary. In 1984, the bishops made a petition to the Vatican regarding the exorcism rite and a commission passed by the decision that she was not possessed. Her grave still became a pilgrimage center for some fringe believers. The movies that I mentioned before are all taken from this episode. I think that what brought me to this subject matter tonight is the new movie that just came out called The Conjuring. And a lot of people I know saw it, and a lot of people came to me and said, what do you think about that? Why don't you do a show on that? So I started doing the research, and I witnessed several different videos online. Most of them were in other countries. I did not see any, except for this very interesting story about Annalisa, and the priest was also exorcised in the United States. And there was an exorcism, according to the computer. I don't know whether this is true. Again, I was not there. But according to what I read today, they performed an exorcism on Sister Teresa. And the reason for that was they were afraid that she was becoming possessed by an evil entity, and they did that just before she died. So I have mixed emotions about many of these things, and as I said, I was raised a Catholic, and it does make sense to me. I must say this: if there is goodness such as God and heaven, then there has to be evil such as the devil and hell. Now, in my realistic mind, the thought of all these evil, horrible-looking monsters coming from the depths of hell and body jumping, that's a little far-fetched for me. I'm being honest. However, can I believe in the power of somebody's mind? Can I believe that somebody, if they believe that that's what's going on in them, indeed, that's what manifests from it? Yes, I can believe that. And I also can believe that with the right ritual in their mind, they can be released from that. So this is very much like the evening that we talked about talking to our loved ones that have passed over. I don't know that you'll ever get any honest-to-goodness living proof on either one of these things, on either one of these topics. But the power of our mind and the way our souls work can do any number of different things to us. We learned that when we talked about the mental illness. I've learned that when I'm spending time talking to people who feel as though they're not alone in their body. I have spoken to several young people who believed that they didn't use the terminology possessed. They often feel as though they have different sides to their personality. So that opens the door to schizophrenia. Now, if you understand schizophrenia and understand the fact that personalities and behavior can be altered by somebody's state of mind, the word possession just has another meaning. And I do think we have seen enough proof that these kind of things can happen. Again, I struggle with the vision of horned monsters coming out of the depths of hell and just jumping into someone's body. I struggle with that. I don't know, that whole scenario for me seems a little far-fetched. And I also believe that if you are devout in your religion and you believe in good versus evil, then I can understand why you would turn to a priest to help you make it through something like the possession of another personality in your body. So I find all of this believable with different definitions for a lot of it. I have watched several movies. I have a favorite movie called The Rite that is with Anthony Hopkins, who I've had the pleasure to meet and spend time with, who is an amazing, amazing actor. I think most of us will agree with that. And he has a very, a very sweet disposition, and he's opened, I think, this is my own analyzation of him. He's open to the imagination of the different characters that he's played. And in The Rite, he plays a priest who is in another country and who spends most of his time exercising mostly young people, and because the parents believe that their children are possessed. And at one point in time, one of the demons leaves the child and comes to him. And it's an amazing movie. I think that it speaks volumes to what can happen to us and to our body and to our complete self when we allow different feelings and thoughts take over our mind. And again, if it is possession of an evil entity, then it is. I didn't read anything today that in any way, shape, or form proved that to me. I read a lot of things where a lot of very, very smart people, a lot smarter than yours truly, believe it. But I also read a lot of things that were, you know, saying some of the same things I'm saying, schizophrenia, mental illness, and religion. I think I've talked a little bit before about religion can have a profound effect on who you become internally. I know that for a fact. And if you do believe and you do respect and you do cherish the things you learn through religion, that can save you, but it can also possibly hurt you, because it all depends on how you digest the information that you're given, which is something that we've talked about so many times in regard to so many different kinds of situations. We talk frequently about people's interpretation of different things, an argument, or an altercation, or a story. Or how about the big one, the Bible? The interpretation of the Bible is all over the board, all over the board. The interpretation of many things that we do every day. When you work with young people, it's very interesting to allow them to give you their thoughts on something. It's always shocking to me, not in a bad way, but in a way that, like, makes me think. If we watch something together, the six-year-old and I, and I say, "What did you think of that?" Sometimes he sounds like a mini-me. Sometimes he says what I know he's heard me say before. And I've already had that effect on him in regard to some things. Then other times he'll say something to me and I'm like, "Oh my God, what an interesting thought on this subject. I would have never thought of that. Never in a million years." And he'll look at me with this face of innocence and truth and say to me, "Don't you think, Graham?" And I have to say sometimes, "I do. I think you might be right. I think, I don't know why I didn't think of that." So I kind of feel that way about this. It's great movie fodder. It's scary and unpredictable, and the kind of thing that you think can happen if you let your imagination wander a little bit. So that even makes it scarier. I remember when my mother read The Exorcist. And then she and the sister that's only 18 months younger than I am, she let my sister read it. And they didn't want me to read it because they were afraid that I would be upset by it, caught up in it. They may have been right when I was 16, 17 years old. They may have been right. But, of course, years later, when they made the movie, I watched the movie. And a lot of it I found to be acting and sensationalism and, you know, a little bit too, I don't know, dramatic to be for true. And I know people that couldn't sit through it in the movie theater. People older than me, people I thought were much wiser than me. It was too scary for them, and for whatever reasons, made them worry about things like demonic possession and things like that. So it's an incredibly interesting, I don't know, subject. The Conjuring, there's an interesting article online about Lorraine Warren. And she now is an older lady, but in The Conjuring, she's one of the people that gets called to this old farmhouse to see if she can feel what the family is feeling and what the family is being haunted by. Now, I've not seen the movie, and I probably won't go see it. I probably will get the video when it comes out and watch it in the privacy of my home. But I probably won't go to the movies to see it. But apparently Lorraine and her husband connected when they were fairly young, 17, I believe the story goes. I watched an interview with her with some kind of Ghostbuster guys. And she talked about the fact that when she was only 9 years old, she saw the lights around people. And she thought everybody saw it. And, of course, that makes sense. When you're nine and you see a green tree, you figure everybody sees a green tree. You see a red rose, you figure everybody sees a red rose. And in most cases, that's true. That's exactly what everybody does see. But imagine being 9 years old, and even anything that was alive, tree, plant, flower, pet, dog, cat, snake, anything, and of course people, she would see different lights around them. And she was going to a Catholic school, and she said to one of the nuns that she found it interesting that this particular nun had a brighter light than Mother Superior. And it got her in trouble. She was told to never say that to anybody again. And she didn't understand it. But that was when she realized that everybody didn't see lights. So she tried to talk to her parents about it. And her parents, according to her, were supportive and loving and kind of understood about what she felt she saw and supported her. But she went on to become a, one of those paranormal people who can walk into different places and feel the energies. Now, in the past several years, I've met many people who talk to me about energy and many people who believe that they feel energy of various kinds. I believe that because there are times when I feel a very strong energy in a room that I'm the only person in. And I'm not going to try to diagnose it because I don't totally understand it. It never makes me uncomfortable. I always have a pleasant feeling about it, so it doesn't frighten me or anything like that. So my assumption is, after I've educated myself on it a little bit, is that it's somebody who cares about me and somebody I care about. So I'm good with that. I'm cool with that, totally. And but I have talked to people who pick up on very ominous energies. And that's what this lady does. And this lady also sees visions and faces and things like that. Now, I can't imagine living a life like that. I can't imagine having your own private psyche invaded upon by things like that. That sounds to me like it must be very, very, very tough. Although the interview that I watched with her, she's probably 70s, 80s, something like that, and she's lovely and still very close to the church and just, you know, well-spoken and very, very kind and very matter-of-fact about what her gifts are. And the movie, The Conjuring, is about her coming to this house. So I think that there's a lot of stuff out there that can be discussed and believed or not believed. If there's anybody out there who would like to talk about that, you are more than welcome to give me your point of view. And you could call in at 347-989-0352. If you have any beliefs or any poo-poos to throw on this, I am certainly listening. I do find it incredibly interesting. And again, I don't know that I am believing in it lock, stock, and barrel, but there is some reality to it. And there is some, I believe there's some truth to it. So, again, I don't know that I follow the complete story, but I do a good portion of the story. But when I was reading and finding all these different things today, I really found some other very interesting some other interesting answers, and this was voted a best answer about is exorcism real. I can only tell you what you believe. Yes, exorcism is real. I have seen things that would make you have to change your panties. That's why I believe it is real. It's not like on TV. It's not something to play around with. Real people get hurt. Some don't make it. You ask, why do some people get possessed and others don't? I have to be honest and say I'm not really sure. I will add that it seems that sometimes it seems as if the devil attacks those who are trying the hardest to live good Christian lives. If you think about it, it kind of makes sense. Look at it this way. The devil doesn't have to steal the souls of those he already has. That's an interesting point of view. I also believe that the devil will torment individuals in particular ways that are most effective for the maximum torment of the particular individual. I believe there are, for lack of better words, different forms of possession. Like I say, it's not like they do it in Hollywood. Not everybody gets possessed by some big, powerful demon. People are afflicted with spirits. Drug addicts fight with the spirit of addiction as an example. That's an interesting point of view. There are spirits of lust, greed, antichrist, the list goes on. Now, do all these people act like the girl in The Exorcist? No. Possession of that kind is real, but extremely rare. Of all the cases that request exorcism throughout the entire world with the Catholic Church, maybe one or two per decade are deemed authentic possession. If you really want to learn about this thing, I caution you, it can be dangerous. It's not to be taken lightly. Well, that's an interesting point of view. Here's another one. It says, exorcism is a real religious rite practiced in the Catholic and many other Christian and non-Christian religions. And this person believes that it's true. Another one. Yes, but beware. Most are not real. The Catholic Church really does perform exorcisms, and there is a compelling evidence that they are real, but in the vast majority of exorcisms and those that claim to be able to perform them, they are fakes. I imagine that's true as well. The devils that possess these people are not like the ones you see in movies. They are more of a life force. There are no horns or pointed tails. They have no bodies. Just about everything else about them is hotly debated, and you will find many people will laugh at the possibility that they could even be real. You should focus on researching official Catholic Church exorcisms, then make up your mind for yourself. Well, those are interesting points of view, I think, and kind of like what I said, they don't really believe, but they do believe. And the other site that I found is Exorcism Real or Just a Mental Illness? And that's what we just talked about. And then, of course, there's the question is, why would God let demons roam the earth? This is by a group of people that says, exorcism real or just a mental illness? Unfortunately, yes. Most people don't believe in these issues until they see it or are a part of it themselves. This changes people, and they will never be the same from what has occurred, if this be the issue. Science has to look at it from a scientific standard and will judge it from a scientific view. So if it's something they cannot explain when it is categorized void, or if fancied, will turn it into a theory. There are things that, when they are official, are not explainable through science or psychology, but are known as something not from this world or dimension, something supernatural. I have witnessed some of these things in my lifetime, and they are not at all in any way psychological, but yet something of an absolute evil. As far as why demons roam the earth, it's complicated. I will say this: we are banished to this realm from Eden, just as the devil was cast from heaven as well. Satan had illusions of power, but not real power. He fooled us, and we both were sent here. That's an interesting point of view. Let's define some of your terms here. If by real you mean that it exists and it's not a Hollywood fake, then yes. If you are asking whether demonization, the proper term instead of possession, is real or mental illness, to the sufferer, it is very real. That's pretty much what I just said as well. To those around them witnessing it, if the demons manifest, it can be very real. My personal take on it is that demons are actually a part of one's human psyche. That, however, does not mean that demons do not exist in material reality. Demons can be manifested into reality by some people. Even the modern, I don't even know what that word is, but even the modern tellings will show you that demons he summons, he manifests from his own mind to do his bidding. So as far as the mental illness is concerned, I would say that while the mentally ill can be a result of perceived demons, that not all those who command demons are mentally ill. I was a pastor and deliverance minister, a polite Protestant way of saying exorcist. No, so that's from somebody who dealt with it firsthand. Yes, possessions are real. You can know that easily. If such a thing as a god or gods or angels exist, the demons are necessary. They do a good job by making you suffer the consequences of your actions. Remember that every action has a reaction. If you do something bad or break the law, you will pay the price. I don't have a religion. I don't believe and trust on angels or God, but I know demons are real, and I've had some real bad experiences with them. So that's an interesting point of view, and I think I see a lot of these here. The people who perform exorcisms are not mentally ill. They know how to make money out of the vulnerable and don't care what happens to their victims. They are the real demons. So, you know, you get a peace of mind from everybody, and everybody has a point of view. And some of them are educated and some of them are not, obviously. I actually wrote a paper on it my junior year of college, and what I found pointed to exorcism being completely real. There are churches around the world that train people in the art of exorcism. Most cases are not actually demonic influence, but every now and again, there are cases that the person being exorcised has no idea about Christianity whatsoever and will shout scripture without missing a word. A popular case that was held by a Roman Catholic church included a possessed boy found in the slums who had never been introduced to Christianity. When exorcised, he had a statue of Jesus in his room. He began screaming to get the statue out and cursing, mentioning Jesus' name and scripture. The statue reportedly heated up to extreme temperatures and busted. The cross they had burned his neck every time they touched him. Now, I read some of those stories, too, in some of the other countries. They talk about that at length. Things like the cross or when a priest or an exorcist that isn't a priest is quoting scripture, there seems to be a lot of activity. And I did watch some videos as well. A couple of them I found to be rather foolish and appeared to be, made up, acted. But then there were some, you know, there was a couple with some levitation, and of course on a video, you can do whatever you want to do. We all know that. But were also some, the pictures that I saw of Annalise Mitchell were awful. And these were real pictures with real people and what she looked like the day she passed. And, of course, a big part of it was her emaciation. An exorcism is when an energy, good or bad, takes over your body or your mind, etc. This exists in a spiritual level as well, but it is not always a demon who can possess. This one is signed Me, Myself, and I, so I guess we know where that one's coming. I think that in a lot of cases, people are torn. They have ideas of what they think it is. The ones that have actually been a part of it, the consensus seems to be that they believe it. But there's an exorcist by the name of Reverend Tom Willis. And it's been dismissed by skeptics who believe it is the stuff of Hollywood horror movies that, rather than real life. But when Pope Francis stopped to lay hands on a disabled boy last week, some believe he shone a new light on the mysterious world of exorcism. And while many people believe it has no place in modern society, there are still ministers across Britain who insist that they are casting out evil spirits. Reverend Tom Willis is the UK's leading exorcist, a man who has been called in to tackle poltergeists and the possessed for the last 15 years. Sorry, the last 50 years. In a lifetime dealing with the supernatural, he says he has seen things that cannot be explained, including ornaments flying through the walls, bodiless voices calling to him from beyond the grave. At the age of 82, the Church of England minister is still in demand around the world from people who want his help to destroy what they believe are evil spirits. His expertise is so valued in Britain that even the police call on him. Reverend Willis says, "The people who come to me are really frightened. I've even had atheists tell me, 'I don't believe in ghosts, but I can't explain what's happening.'" He adds, "I always say, you don't get possessed just by walking to the supermarket. You have to look for a reason why it should have happened. Often people have dabbled quite strongly in evil." Reverend Willis found his spooky vocation while working as a minister in York. When a parishioner asked for help dealing with her haunted house, Reverend Willis says it's more common than people think. He discovered that he had a gift for restoring peace. Since then, he's found himself in some strange and scary situations, including the time he helped rid a medium of a powerful evil spirit. Reverend Willis says the man approached him after giving a speech about the supernatural. The stranger kept tapping his shoulder and talking to an invisible companion. Reverend Willis was unsure if the medium was pretending until the conversation took an unexpected turn. The Reverend says, "When I mentioned the blood of Christ, his voice changed. He said, 'Don't talk about that,' and started shaking and rubbing himself. At that point, I thought, 'You really have got something evil in you.'" Reverend Willis is part of the international exorcist community and has heard some startling stories on his travels, like the time one of his colleagues was asked to perform an exorcism in India on a girl who couldn't speak. The colleague told me that when he blessed her, she began to shake. He asked the girl what her name was, and although she didn't usually talk, a weird voice said, "I am Stubbornness." He commanded the evil to depart, and she fell back. He went on down the line blessing people, and when he looked back, she had started singing hymns in her normal language. Reverend Willis is often called on to rid haunted houses of ghosts. He had a particularly chilling experience when he went to the home of a policeman who feared that his home had become possessed. As Reverend Willis sat with the officer and his family, ornaments suddenly started to move. "I couldn't believe what I was seeing," he said. After 10 minutes, the father said, "The dog ornament has gone again." I looked at the mantelpiece, and it had. Then I heard a thump in the kitchen and said, "Nobody move." I went to take a look, and the ornament was there on the kitchen floor. It had gone right through a brick wall. Speaking about the continuing demand for his services, including from the authorities, he says, "I still get a couple calls a week. The police say we think this one is more in your field of expertise." Reverend Willis has encountered his fair share of skeptics over the decades, but he says he is convinced by what he has witnessed. He adds that 1 in 10 people will claim to see a ghost during their lifetime. Now, one of his 4 daughters is documenting his spooky experiences for a book which will feature the strangest cases he has dealt with. And while he's happy to talk about some of the frightening episodes, he's keen to point out that not every claim is genuine. He says some of the reports of hauntings and possessions are made by attention seekers as well as people with mental health problems. Reverend Willis knows that some people dismiss every claim about evil spirits, but he says what the Pope did at the Vatican 8 days ago has sparked a much-needed debate about the subject. The pontiff touched the head of a boy who then convulsed and slumped in his wheelchair. Some say it was an exorcism, though the Vatican has denied it. Even so, Reverend Willis says, this Pope and the last have encouraged the ministry of exorcism and set up conferences and colleagues because it is a problem that is brought to them. This means exorcists like Reverend Willis will continue to be called into action, tending to the spiritual needs of their flocks and the wider population. It isn't always as easy a task, but the minister says the strength of his faith continues to guide him. "It can be uncomfortable if I lay my hands on someone for healing and they growl at me in a weird voice," he explains. "And I might bring another couple of priests in to help me. In the end, I know evil exists, but it is afraid of good. I need to be wary of it, but I should not be afraid. That is what my work is all about." I don't know about you guys, but that was a great story, and I think that it's true, that everything that he just said is for real in his world. And notice he doesn't say everybody calls him for the right reasons. He says everybody calls them for their reasons. And just like what we just talked about a little bit ago. I think we live in a world of so much turmoil. And remember what he said. He said that a lot of times when somebody struggles with these kind of problems, it's because they bring them into their lives. They bring the evil into their lives by dabbling in things that they don't understand or that they don't know about. And I think hate and prejudice and judgmentality is all of that. I think that we need to let go of all those things. It's all right for you to not love everybody, but have a reason other than what they look like or who you think they are before you even get to know them. That brings as much evil into your life as anything else that there is in this world. So, I want to thank you all for joining me tonight. I'm sorry nobody called in and asked any questions about this. We will talk about it again. And tomorrow night we're going to talk about, it's on my Facebook page if anybody is interested in listening to it. It's Bryant Gumbel talking about the opportunity for special men and women to participate in high energy sports such as fighting, etc. He seems to think that it is unkind, and I think he needs to reevaluate what he's watching. But We will talk about that tomorrow and talk about exactly what he says, and I hope I have a couple callers who are involved in those things who can set us straight. That just like everything else, we are all entitled to do the things that bring us any kind of joy and happiness. So, everybody, from my heart to yours, this is Renee. Good night and God bless.